And welcome, folks. It is Wednesday, February 12th, 2025. I remember this day, let me see, 38 years ago, that for reasons I won't get into. But, man, I'm going to tell you, time is just flying by. We have a great show for you tonight, lined up for you tonight. On deck with me, joining me here, coming right up is Josh Mez. We're going to be talking about a number of different things. It's some really serious things. Something that I heard and I just kind of put aside. And then I heard it again from someone else. Somebody's saying, hey, you better watch this. I'm hearing things, a warning of attacks. And you know, we get those all the time, right? We get them all the time. You know, be wary of who knows. And you know, how many years do we agonize over or consider being attacked? Oh, watch the Super Bowl. And well, we always have to watch high profile events, but this is something a little bit different and for different reasons. Okay. But with a mass casualty intent. And then I saw tonight, a video clip, and it's long. I mean, the video clip is really, it's 16 minutes, maybe more than that. But I cut it up a little bit, and I want to talk to you about that. But I'm going to wait on that, because usually we have people filing into the show, and a lot of times they'll miss like the first segment or two. And then, so I'm going to wait until the top of the hour to get into that. But it's extremely important, folks. You've got to pay attention to what I believe is being planned. And I'm not sure what shape it's going to take, but the people behind it and what we are doing in the meantime. Before I get into everything, I just want to thank you, the people who support this show. Without you, we could not do this. I also want to thank, of course, our corporate sponsors, including ChuckDefense.com/Hagman, ChuckDefense.com/Hagman. Folks, watch the video there, okay? Just watch this video and implement the information you derive from this video. Chuck Norris, he's a legend out there. He and his wife they do what's in this video. Both of them are stronger. They feel younger. They've got more energy. I mean, it's incredible. Okay. One change they made. Again, they both extol the virtues of this specific change and doing what they do. They've never felt better. You too can feel different, have more energy, more stamina. Just go to ChuckDefense.com/Hagman. Click in the link below this video. It's going to change the way you think about your health. And I mean that. It's going to change the way you think about your health. Once again, that's ChuckDefense.com/Hagman. And watch the video. Just watch the video. You're not going to believe how simple things really can be. All right. Again, thank you to ChuckDefense.com/Hagman. All right. I'm going to bring on, without any further ado, I'm going to bring on Josh Mez. Of course, he is the expert in all things electronic or AI. He's very well versed in current events, some strategy and tactics. He's an investigator, researcher, all around good guy, the man, the myth, the legend, Josh Mez. How are you, sir? Come on.
How you doing, Doug? Thanks for having me tonight.
Yeah, man. It's good to have you. We spoke after, what was it? Yeah, was InfoWars yesterday?
Was that?
We spoke after that, and how could I put this? What you said to me afterwards, boy, has that come true.
Yep.
Oh boy, rattled some cages. All right. But without regard to that, folks,
wait till they see some of the connections we've made with the geofencing.
Wow. Okay. Boy, you get both feet right into it. Some of the, yeah, you know what? And that's something that people have to, I don't think people really understand how they're being tracked. You know, you walk around with a cell phone, and I don't care if you have four cell phones on your body. You walk around with them, they track you. It's supposedly for ad purposes. They could tell where you've been. I mean, for, you know, for almost like forever, okay, for that number. Then that shows up as a device ID and it puts you at a certain place. And once you identify, let's say you're home, you know, and it'll show you wherever you went all across the world. And it's accurate within, I don't know. I think they talk in meters. So it's like 6 meters. Okay. Maybe even 3 meters. I'm not sure, but anyway, it's just phenomenal. And the connections that are made there. Oh boy. Oh boy. So yes, you're absolutely right. And by the way, folks, Mez is like one of the, I don't know that much. I mean, I know enough to be dangerous with that, but Mez knows a heck of a lot more than I do. So just say it. All right. I'm going to start off with this. And folks, you saw that. I'm sure you saw this. Obviously, we had, we expect all of President Trump's cabinet picks to make it in there. It's interesting how Schumer, or not Schumer, but McConnell, you know, what a putz he is. But speaking of Attorney General Pam Bondi, Mez, I'm gonna play this first clip and let's talk about this. Pam Bondi files charges against the state of New York. Now, she's filing charges against the state of New York writ large, okay? But she's also filing charges against Governor Kathy Hochul, State Attorney General, Letitia Fatbottom James, and the director of the DMV there, and his name is Schroeder. And you can go to New York DMV and find his picture and all and learn all about him. And the reason, of course, they're filing charges, it's much like Illinois. They're harboring fugitives, harboring illegals, and they are harboring and impeding the investigative activities of ICE, of Customs and Border Patrol, as well as some of the some of the investigators and investigations that are taking place with respect to the NGOs and the locations that are receiving the money from the NGOs. So here's cut one. It's just under 2 minutes. Mez, you got the floor after this. Here it is.
Thanks for being patient with us with the delay. We're here today because we have filed charges against the state of New York. We have filed charges against Kathy Hochul. We have filed charges against Letitia James and Mark Schroeder, who is with DMV. This is a new DOJ, and we are taking steps to protect Americans, American citizens, and angel moms, like the mom standing right behind me, who you're going to hear from in a moment. New York has chosen to prioritize illegal aliens over American citizens. It stops today. As you know, we sued Illinois, and New York didn't listen. So now you're next. Millions of illegal aliens with violent records have flooded into our communities, bringing violence and deadly drugs with them. With me today, I'm so proud to be joined by Tammy Nobles. Tammy is an angel mom. Her beautiful daughter, Kayla Hamilton, was murdered by an MS-13 member in 2022. Kayla had just turned 20 years old, and she was raped and murdered by someone who should not have been in our country. Yet, he was released, flown to Maryland, where he committed this violent murder. I just want you to hear from Tammy. Tammy represents not only herself and her family, but all of the great angel moms around this country who have suffered because of what the Biden administration did, and it is over.
Okay, two things before I bring Josh on. When I was in D.C. back, 2017, 18, whatever it was, I had the chance to interview a number of angel moms, and there's a sister organization or a similar organization, and I interviewed some of those mothers, and we had a they had a press conference at the Capitol, and there of course was Kellyanne Conway, Sebastian Gorka. Think of these people what you will, but some very high profile members of President Trump's first cabinet. Well, what we saw was a lot of pushback against the against President Trump's policies. That's number one. Number two, people, I've been watching the response to this, and obviously this is not a criminal suit, but a civil suit. And you might say, well, I didn't know that the attorney general could bring forth a civil action against government officials. Well, they can. And it's codependent upon state and federal law. All right. Now, it's kind of a lengthy explanation. But here's the rub where, and I want people to understand this. I'm going to turn right over to you, Josh. But here's what I want people to really understand. When the attorney general files charges, and I have not seen the charging documents. I don't think they're out there yet. But this will include, it is my understanding, and I could be wrong after looking at the charging documents, but this will include the cessation of federal funds to the sanctuary police departments or the police departments in the sanctuary cities, as well as the state police in the sanctuary states, or those adopting the sanctuary policies. This is really important because all of a sudden, you know, car 52 breaks down. People, you got to be a little older to get that, like a lot older. Car 52, where are you? And broken down. Why are you broken down? We didn't get any federal funds. Why didn't we get any federal funds? It's because of you guys. All right. Ms., what are your thoughts on this following Illinois, the same thing, Pritzker, flea bag? So what do you think of this, man? Any comments on this? Any...
You know what I find interesting is that President Trump actually has a meeting scheduled with Kathy Hochul tomorrow.
Yeah.
So I think Trump is doing what he typically does, and he's just putting himself in a place where he can negotiate from a place of strength. And basically, he's going to give them all an ultimatum and tell them this is how it's going to be, or these are, you know, we're going to move forward with this. I think they're going to absolutely flip on the green light law. I don't think they really have a choice at the moment but who knows? New York, you never know in New York. They go their own direction every single time. And, we'll see what these Soros funded, AGs and the governor want to do. I would think that Trump is going to have them in a position where he has a lot of leverage over them at the moment. So I think he'll get at least some partial concessions tomorrow.
You know, I think you are correct in this because what we're seeing is, I don't even know how to describe it. When I was watching a lot of the news programs today, my head's about to explode after watching MSNBC, CNN. I did watch the CNBC as well. Sorry about that. As well as Fox, which, okay, and RAV, which I think's got probably one of the best networks out there. And I do believe that revenge is going to be attempted against President Trump through lawfare. Failing that, I think it's going to get worse. But I'm still optimistic. Like you said, I think he can eke out a specific deal maybe with these states that are non-compliant.
Yeah, and I think that's exactly why Trump has to keep with the pace. He has to keep going as fast as he is right now, because if he stops even for a minute, we cannot let them get organized. Once they have a grasp of what's going on and they can start firing back and actually trying to stay ahead of these lawsuits, it's going to slow Trump down a little bit. So it's a race to see how much he can get done before that all happens. And I think we're going to start seeing a slowdown here in the next 30 days or so. He's going to start running into some brick walls, a lot more lawsuits, and a lot more resistance from the left. So I think it's critically important that these nominations get through. I'm glad to see that some of them did today. But once they get their bearings, it's going to turn out into pretty much an all-out war in terms of lawfare. And I think we're going to have them pretty well over the barrel, but it's going to be an interesting year for sure.
It already, the last 24 days or however long, 23 days, has been interesting. And I think this shotgun approach by President Trump and by the cabinet, I truly believe this is like the way to do this, because what I've seen President Trump do, and tell me if this is right, it's destabilizing the left, the enemies within. It's actually, first of all, the media, they don't know what to report on, where and what to say. And then the actual enemies within don't know how to respond or what to respond to first. I mean, is that the strategy or one of the strategies here?
Yeah, everything we're looking at, I believe, is part of just an extremely well-organized plan. And he's going to continue just doing exactly what you said. It's just shotgun blasting as much stuff as he can as quickly as he can, and trying to stay ahead of them. He whenever we see President Trump speaking, taking questions, basically having any conversations that he's having, any time he's really out in front of the public, he speaks in very, very generalized terms, and he repeats himself over and over and over again. But we have to remember, it's all part of a much more strategic plan that's going on behind the scenes. He is kind of the facilitator, where he's at the very top of the pyramid. So the guys underneath him, he might not. And this is typical of any CEO of any company. You want the people surrounding you to be the smartest people in the room. You don't necessarily have to be the smartest person in the room, as long as the people that you bring with you know exactly how to execute the plan. And I think that's what we're seeing across all facets and on every front of this war that he's fighting right now.
And honestly, folks, that's what Mez is doing here. That's what Josh Mez is doing here. As an investigator, I've learned, you never want to be the smartest person in the room. You want to be, obviously, perhaps the most informed, but not the most intelligent. And there's a reason for that. And the reason is, you can depend upon others in the room or at the investigation table, with the investigators sitting there, and they will bring up things that maybe you never thought of. Now, you can direct that, as President Trump is doing, direct that in a certain fashion. And that, of course, is most effective, because you can, as like in our business, Josh Mez, in our business as an investigator, as a researcher, I rely on you, for example, as you jumped in with both feet, for an analysis of the geofencing in certain respects. Or it blew my mind. Folks, I'll just tell you a real quick story about Josh Mez. I remember this is Saturday night. He was with his kids, and I said, "Hey, can you take a look at this? Because I'm not seeing something here. I don't know what the heck I'm looking at." And he sat down at my desk, pushed some buttons, did some things, and pretty soon, the clarity, and he said, "Look, this is where this device is, and this is where this device is, and this is where it was." And through that, a location was identified, a street location. And that street location led to another, led to a person of interest. And this is during the Butler investigation. So anyway, that's what Josh Mez did and is doing. And that's why you need these important, smart individuals behind it. All right. Sorry, I wanted to throw that out there and give you the credit, because you deserve a lot of credit. As, by the way, as does Eric the Tech. He's like that, too. He could take a look at something, and within, like, you know, a couple of minutes, solve the Rubik's Cube of the problem. All right. A 57-second clip. This ends the Pam Bondi. I didn't play the Angel Mom's story. You should watch the entire press conference, folks, of AG Bondi. You can find it online. But here's the last less than a minute. And I think it drives the point home, especially the point that Mez made. Here it is. This is cut to under a minute.
Yeah, well, we're hoping that in New York, Mayor Adams is going to cooperate with us, with the sanctuary cities and the illegal aliens. And has the mayor in Colorado been cooperating? Do we know? I believe he might have now. Yeah, I believe Colorado is now cooperating. That's what we want. We don't want to sue you. We don't want to prosecute people. We want people to comply with the law. This is very simple. An MS-13 member murdered her daughter. That's happening throughout this country. We have one angel mom is too many. And we have angel moms throughout this country who should not be going through this. Comply with the law. This is the last thing we want to be doing. We want to be out there, all of us, fighting violent crime. Yet we're fighting illegal aliens. And that ends. And it's going to end today.
That's all we have time for, guys.
And it's going to end today. That says it all. And the issue of compliance of Colorado, or implied compliance there, I think is what you were talking about, you know, the Bondi-Trump effect in the negotiation. You don't even have to negotiate, right? I mean, there it is.
Right. And notice how we don't have any specific filings yet either. So we don't know exactly what their intentions are here. They just said they're being charged. Well, with what specifically? We don't know that yet. And that's intentional. That's intentional because
that's interesting.
That's what I mean. That when they're speaking in generalities like that, there's typically another purpose behind it. So everybody's wondering, well, what exactly, charging them with what? What are we doing here? Is it criminal? Is it civil? Of course, you know, then she alluded to, is it going to be civil? But exactly what and how? And that's what we don't know yet. We just know that it is filed, allegedly. And now that they go into this meeting tomorrow, we'll see what happens. But I'm guessing we're going to come out of that meeting tomorrow and we're going to get some decent news. I don't know if we're going to get everything that we want out of it, but I'm pretty sure we'll have some type of concession tomorrow.
What you said is interesting because, again, this is in the civil venue. That's pretty much been determined. If you look at what the filings, or look at the comments about the filings for Illinois, and there's an adage, or there's a rule in law where you cannot leverage a civil tort or a civil wrong with the threat of criminal prosecution. So, however, there's the other, the flip side to that is that civil tort or civil wrong, the civil suit against Hochul and others, it could very well expose the criminal avenues and especially the follow the money trail. So that, because I'm seeing so many people saying, you know what, I'm not going to be happy until I see perp walks. Well, wait a second. How long has Pam Bondi been in office? I mean, how long has President Trump been in office? How many million, how long was Biden and Obama and their motley crew in office? Okay, so give it some time. Give it, but anyway. So you're right on the money with this, I believe.
And yeah, right. And it's going to take years. This isn't something that is going to get done overnight either. I think as we get in depth into a lot of these allegations and a lot of the stuff that's being presented to us right now in a broad context, it's going to get, once that gets more in depth, we'll start seeing some more activity in terms of charges and things like that. But that's, we got to remember, that's going to be down the road. That's months and months, if not years, down the road here. So, I'm as excited as anybody else to see what happens. And hopefully, you know, in terms of just kind of restoring integrity to the country here. But it's going to be a process. I don't think we should get too far ahead of ourselves in hoping that we're going to see everybody perp walked and, you know, it's going to happen right away. It's just, that's not how our legal system works. And Trump even just today was telling some reporters that he's going to go by the letter of the law. If a judge does put a stop to some of the things that he's doing, he's going to listen, and then they're going to fight it out in court. He's not going to take anything into his own hands and or ignore orders from any judge. Even though that's what exactly a lot of us want to see, because it's been what's going on.
Biden told SCOTUS over the school thing to, you know, F off, and it's okay for them. But I think that goes a long way. What you described, I think that goes a long way for the probability of maybe working this into law, you know, having this codified, okay, the various EOs codified. That's just my view, because you're looking, okay, we're playing ball. To some extent, we're playing ball. Cutting off the funding is a big deal, because right away, cutting off the funding for, because they're a sanctuary city, state, whatever, it's a big deal. So that's going to hurt. And that's going to cause people. It's going to cause people to take notice. So yeah, you're right. I'm going to as well, folks. I don't know how many people saw this. This is cut four, Eric the Tech. Carolyn Leavitt. You got to love her. Compare her to that lesbian corn rolled book or binder holding press secretary for Biden, who couldn't answer a question even with a binder in front of her. When's the last time, you know, I can't even go back there. Reporter today pressed Carolyn Leavitt for proof of ridiculous allegations are ridiculous contracts that Doge is terminating. And this reporter basically was saying, you really don't have any proof, all this other stuff. And I heard a couple of reports on the left stations that, you know, the $57 million for condoms was a lie for the Middle East and such. Well, wait a second. No. No,
I think it was for Rwanda or something like that. It was for some African country. Well, they made the mistake he made. They said Gaza at first. The mistake that he made was going to Rwanda or something like that.
That's right.
Either way, you know, it's still.
Well, I just loved it. And Josh, I should add, by the way, he's been so busy the last couple of days, I'm surprised he was able to break free this evening. If I could tape a broom to his backside, he could sweep the floor and do everything else at the same time. But so I really appreciate him coming on. But here's Carolyn Leavitt today responding to the demand for proof, or saying that basically you don't have any proof. This is all talk. It's all BS. This is really good. This is a little longer. It's about 2.5 minutes long, but it's worth every second of it. And watch the end, because, man, folks in the chat, I'm going to see this in about 5 seconds, but did you see this press conference? Oh, did you see this clip, folks in the chat? Carolyn Leavitt pulling out the receipts? Well, if not, you can see it now. Here's cut four.
In the Oval yesterday, gave us some information on that. We're just wondering if there's some proof, evidence. Is the White House willing to share evidence of those fraud claims, or can Elon Musk come to the briefing room and share material evidence of what he's talking about?
Sure. I would love for Elon Musk to come to the briefing room. That's why we had him go to the Oval Office yesterday, where I think he provided great answers. He was speaking in layman's terms, speaking common sense to all of you in the media, but also to Americans at home. But I would say especially to all of you in the media, because I think it's a real fallacy that there's this alleged lack of transparency when it comes to Doge. President Trump and Elon Musk have been incredibly transparent on what Doge is doing. There is an X account with the Doge handle. They are tweeting out what they are doing on a daily basis. They have a website where they are posting the receipts of the contracts that they are reviewing and the payments that they have stopped from going out the door. The secretaries of our departments have stopped from going out the door. And I would also say that before it was Elon Musk making our government efficient and accountable, it was some unnamed bureaucrat that none of you knew. Elon Musk is the richest man in the world. He's also now one of the most highly scrutinized men in the world alongside President Trump because of what he's doing and the access that he is allowing. So there's great transparency. As for the actual receipts, we are happy to provide them, and I actually brought some today because all of you know I love to bring the receipts. We have contracts upon contracts that we can send and provide this information to you. Let me be very clear. We are not trying to hide anything. We have been incredibly transparent, and we will continue to be. These are screenshots of contracts that Doge found across our government. This is a DEI contract, $36,000 for U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services. That is against the president's policies in his America First agenda. This is a $3.4 million contract, a Council for Inclusive Innovation at the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, Department of Commerce, another DEI contract that Doge identified. I can continue to go through these. Oh, I love this one. $57,000 for climate change in Sri Lanka. What is this doing to continue the interests of the American people? Absolutely nothing. These are the line items across the federal government that Doge is identifying daily. They're moving very fast. There's a lot of paper that we can show you, but we're happy to do it. This administration has been more than transparent about what Doge is doing. And here's one of their tweets that they posted about the mine. I believe this is in Pennsylvania, where the federal employee retirement system is being processed. Did anybody know this was even happening in our country before Elon Musk talked about it in the Oval Office yesterday? A lot of Americans didn't. So we are providing transparency and accessibility on a daily basis when it comes to Doge.
Yeah, go figure. That last part, it's just mind-blowing, but it's refreshing, isn't it, Josh, to see that? I mean, my goodness.
It is, and you notice how she even said at the beginning of her response there was Elon Musk is speaking in layman's terms, speaking in generalities. So they're not giving you the full playbook. They're telling you what they're doing, and they're being very transparent about it, but they're not showing their entire strategy and showing exactly what fraud, the intricacies of the fraud that they're catching yet. I think they're taking that. They're getting as much intel and gathering as much data as they can, and they're letting us know exactly what's happening along the way. But you can see the media is really pressing them to get some actual information out of them, and it's just not going to happen because they, you know, they're playing by a whole different playbook there. So,
yeah, There's a lot happening behind the scenes as well. I think a lot of strategy sessions.
Well, and you know, something that it just kind of popped into my mind here when we were speaking about after your interview yesterday, you know, a couple of those locations that we had on that geofencing. Do you recall the one of those facilities? I wonder if any of that was receiving any USAID funding.
I guess I really never thought of that.
Yeah, and I think that's some of the stuff that they're, you know, that's some of the stuff that's going on behind the scenes here. So I think, you know, I think there's a lot more at work here. And then, again, regarding the Iron Mountain facility, that's been there for years. That's also in Butler, ironically enough.
You knew about that?
Yeah. Yeah. Just through, you know, through,
see the
through my background.
That's why he gets a big bucks. Was anything ever taken there? I'm trying to be very careful about the. I asked the question. Were you aware of any things taken to that location, or? I mean, does it matter? I don't even know if that matters, but.
I've been there. Let's just put it that way.
You've been there, Eric the Tech. We better have a investigative meeting tomorrow. Okay. Let's see. Hang on a second. Okay. All right. Well, you know, you brought up something very interesting with respect to our collective investigation of, as an investigative body. And I mentioned yesterday, I'm going to mention this again. Josh is very well aware of this. You know, over 300 man hours since assignment, 7 total investigators. We've traveled over 3,000 miles only in western Pennsylvania during the course of this investigation, which is still ongoing. Conducted over 100 in-person interviews, 300 plus pages of investigative documents, some open source, some not, some most generated from the investigation, and then 800 pages of post-investigative reports. So, you know, that's where we're at. And I know I mentioned it yesterday, but I wanted to re-mention that or mention that again, because I think it's important. I think it's important for people to understand the scope. But you know what's missing out of this? And you brought this up, the money trail. I shouldn't say missing. I'm not complete on following through on this. Any thoughts off the cuff right now about the money trail of that, that whole incident on July 13th in Butler, Pennsylvania?
Careful. I think that we're going to get more information here pretty, within the next, 60 to 90 days regarding some of that, follow the money. It'll all tie together, and I think they'll be able to start connecting some of the dots and some of the things that we've been working on. I think, you know, even some of the stuff that we've been working on, I think we'll be able to put some two and two together here in the coming days. So hopefully we'll be able to expand on that pretty quickly and get some more information out there. But, you know, as of right now, it's just, hey, we're going to see what crumbs they give us and try to put the rest of the pieces together ourselves.
And that's one thing that I heard in the Epoch Times reported on. President Trump is very interested, you know, in the why he's not getting details about the about either attempt, high profile attempt, on his life, whether it was in Florida or Pennsylvania. So there's going to be some additional inquiries that he's going to be ordering. Okay. Kind of continuing on with this, or before I continue on with this, you know, you sent me a text the other day, and I don't have it in front of me, but you said, see, I nailed this. Well, maybe I do have it in front of me. You remember what you were talking about? Because when you were on last, you talked about...
So remember we were talking about Sam Altman and the $500 billion grant that Donald Trump was going to award to OpenAI, Cisco, and that bank, SoftBank, I believe. And we were talking about how we don't really trust Sam Altman and how Sam Altman was a big Trump hater. And why would Elon not be getting first shot at that, especially with his background in AI?
That's right.
Well, then, you know, come Monday evening, what do we see? Musk-led group of investors submit unsolicited bid of $97.4 billion to take over OpenAI.
So that's
basically right.
Right
on cue, exactly as we had predicted. They are basically trying to strong-arm Altman and get him out of there. Because that was the whole, and that's, you know, when we're talking about the generalities right there, a perfect example. He has a press conference. He's speaking, oh, we're going to do this, we're going to do that, it's going to be great. And then behind the scenes, there's a lot of things going on that are in motion with their they have thousands of lawyers, personnel working behind the scenes, and then boom, here's what you get. So, 97 billion dollar offer unsolicited.
97.4, yeah.
And that's the thing. 97.4 billion unsolicited. That means OpenAI wasn't looking for a bid. This is Elon Musk basically saying, "I'm coming for you," and that's what we're gonna see. And I think, Elon giving his time and doing what he's doing. Is he trying to help? Yes, but he is a businessman. So at the end of the day, he's going to get a return on his investment with his time, I'm sure, in some way or another. Perfectly legal, perfectly within his rights to do so. He's not scamming anybody or trying to pull the wool over anybody's eyes. But of course, he is a very strategic person. He's very much like Donald Trump, where he's thinking five steps ahead and plotting and planning continuously. So I think you'll see some stuff regarding Elon Musk and him really trying to put his footprint on his fingerprints on the AI, the realm of AI here in a more expanded sense than he already has with Grok and some of his other platforms. I think he's really going to make a big push for that here coming soon. And, I wouldn't be surprised to see some of this lawfare start happening with OpenAI and ChatGPT.
Wow. Okay. Would it be correct to say, because AI, I think, is one front of World War III. Okay. So we have, we're in a war with China. We're in a proxy war with Russia. You've got Ukraine and you've got other countries in Europe supporting Ukraine, supplying munitions. So World War III's already started. I mean, essentially. But it's my understanding how you added to this, AI is going to be a major component in the fight of this war. Is that the way you explained it was a lot better than I just tried to.
Well, unfortunately, I think it's going to be a perpetual war here moving forward with AI. It's not going anywhere. We have hostile countries and hostile countries that have bad intentions that are implementing AI and moving as fast as they can to stay ahead of the United States on this. So obviously we're going to respond in kind, and it's not going to be something that's going to be able to go away. So it's going to be a perpetual war. It's going to be something that is going to have to And that's one of the things that within his bid or the purpose that Elon Musk was talking about is he wants to make it open source. Now, again, it's I want to try, you know, I want to hope for the best with all of that with him. I don't think he has any grand plans to take over the world. But I do think he wants to thrust humanity into a new, like a AI era. He wants to kind of lead the revolution into the AI era. But he wants to make sure, hopefully, from, you know, what we can see that everything is done ethically, because that's just the way he sees the world going. And you know, if you're looking at anything like Bitcoin or crypto or, any of this AI, I mean, everything is becoming, is turning into, you know, electronic, digital warfare pretty much. It's going to be interesting. And the only thing that's going to really, it's going to take any of that offline would be if the grid goes down, and, you know, we both know that's a very real possibility as well. So, that could be a point of emphasis within this, AI, infrastructure here, is because it does require a ton of energy, so that, you know, we're going to see a lot more of our energy sector starting to get targeted.
Why? Okay. Maybe this is just the most basic question ever, but why does it require energy? So much energy, so much more energy. Why?
The processing power of these supercomputers that they're using is just astronomical. It takes up, an insane amount of power to run these data facilities.
Okay. Well, all right. And then the possibility, like you said, of an EMP or power disruption from whatever source. Okay, that's a problem. But we'd have bigger problems at that point. I mean, more problems than just we'd be up a creek. Most people. And that's why a couple of people I've had on in the past said, you know, when you're prepping like you're prepping for the 1800s, living in that era. So I guess that's a good piece of advice. Wow. Okay. All right. So getting back to a little bit of the fight, yesterday I mentioned about the activist judges. I come to find out, when it's all said and done, there are a total of 11 activist judges, who have obstructed 8 of President Trump's actions. And I didn't mention Judge Lauren Alley Kahn. There's another judge, that ended birthright citizens or trying to end birthright citizenship. Another couple of them, that is. And I think those were the ones I omitted. Yeah, pretty much. So anyway, keep your eyes on that. But it's in that vein, I saw this video, Josh and folks in the chat. I saw this video and I watched it and I watched it again. This small clip. Just about 3 minutes long. And folks, I think this is important for people to understand. And Josh, I doubt you've had the chance to see this. This is a cut 5 in the show notes. Go to HagmanPI.com and that's where you find it all. Activist judges are Trump's biggest enemy. The reason I wanted to play this now is because there's another video after that is contingent upon this first video. Eric the Tech, my apologies. What I'd like to do, the man behind this, okay, this is cut 7 first. This is 23 seconds. And Josh, you can, again, comment on this because this is your favorite person. I know. Okay, so before the activist judges, of course, recently at the WEF, George Soros had a chance to speak. Did you catch what happened, how he described President Trump at the WEF? I mean, I would have slapped the living snot out of this guy talking about my president that way. And I don't even know why he's sucking air. But anyway, Here's cut 7, 23 seconds long. And in that 23 seconds, he manages to piss me off probably about 23 minutes worth. Check this out.
President Trump is a con man and the ultimate narcissist who wants the world to revolve around him. When his fantasy of becoming president came true, his narcissism developed a pathological dimension.
And the reason I wanted that slipped in there, Josh and folks, was because of the man behind the activist judges in many cases is that man right there. The fight against President Trump is that guy right there. Not the only one, obviously, but the guy with the monocle in the monopoly with the money bag, and that's Soros. Takes down countries. And there is floating around on social media a video, and it's not in the show notes, but there's a video out there, him from a couple of years ago, a couple of decades ago maybe, talking about him being an immoral and moral person. It's just, it's bizarre. But okay, going back to cut 5, activist judges are Trump's biggest enemy. And I'd like your take on this, because I know you haven't seen this because of your schedule. And folks, pay attention to this, because I think when you look at the actions and you look at, as Josh was talking about, President Trump's strategy, think about the strategy moving forward after watching this. Cut 5.
Well, thank you for your service, John. And I got to tell you, this has been an issue that both sides certainly use. Can it ever change? I know there's some legislation that's been proposed. It never seems to get through. Will this ever change?
Probably not. But just think of the concept. We have a judge. I'm in Massachusetts. I still practice in Rhode Island. And the attorney general said, you know what? We're going to sue Trump and the administration. We got to stop this. God forbid we actually look at our spending. God forbid we get rid of some fraud, waste, and abuse and save taxpayers money. But we're going to stop that. How do we do that? We find a judge that we know is going to give us what we want, so then we can, you know, say, hey, this little district judge in Rhode Island is stopping the president of the United States and the will of the people who just elected him. It is a pretty absurd when you see it in practice, Grant.
All right. So Sonia Sotomayor, Supreme Court Justice, comes out to the rescue for her liberal judges. Listen to what she says as President Trump and his team start thinking, hey, should we ignore some of these district court opinions? Listen to the Supreme Court Justice.
Court decisions stand whether one particular person chooses to abide by them or not. It doesn't change the foundation that it's still a court order that someone will respect at some point.
You know, I think, John, Joe Biden didn't respect the court order of the United States Supreme Court when they ruled that his student loan payoff program was unconstitutional. He basically ignored that. President Trump's talking about district court judges. And I think it's different when you have a president than what she's talking about there, John.
100%. Listen, the Supreme Court invalidated, you know, allowing the Biden administration to allow plumbers to pay for Harvard MBAs, right? And they said, no, that's unconstitutional. What does Joe Biden do? Or someone under him turns around, circumvents the United States Supreme Court law of the land. What we're talking about with President Trump right now are district court judges who are issuing, saying, no, you can't stop. You can't freeze government spending. You have to pay these people. Now imagine that. And the viewers imagine, Grant, that President Trump, Elon Musk, they see that this is fraud, but we have to still pay for it? That's insane. And I can understand people saying, well, why would you listen to a district court judge? But you made the best distinction. There's a big difference between a federal district court judge in Rhode Island or California and the United States Supreme Court.
Do you think this idea that a district court's opinion would work if it works for his district, his jurisdiction, and you don't push it all the way across the country?
Yeah, we have to do something to change that. But, you know, the good news here is that the First Circuit went up to appeal. The First Circuit here on the Rhode Island decision, where they said they're going to freeze, not allow Trump to freeze government spending. But the good news is we're probably going to see the Supreme Court come down in the next few weeks and resolve this.
Yeah. And as I mentioned at the top of the show, a Massachusetts judge, by the way, ruled in favor that President Trump does have the right to offer these buyouts to 2 million federal employees. And that program can go forward. John Deaton, I appreciate you coming on the program today. First time. We'll have to get you back real soon.
It'll be my pleasure, my friend. Thank you for having me.
That's kind of what you said. And that would put a stop to judge shopping and then SCOTUS rules and bada bing, bada bang. It's going to have a bad effect on further illegal roadblocks, right? I mean, that's kind of what you said, in a sense, the strategy behind this.
Right. Yeah. I think they're trying to basically right now we're seeing a lot of corruption just exposing itself. It is, it's out there, and you're basically getting a front row seat to see, hey, here are the judges that have been corrupt this entire time, who are funded by Soros. And I know Soros has said multiple times, he says it pretty frequently from what I can remember about him. Yep. But he just says, I'm here to make money, and he does not care about the morality of the business decisions that he's making. So he doesn't care about who it affects, how it affects anyone. He says, he looks at business as being amoral, if you're not making money, then you're basically failing. So he doesn't look at the morality of things at all.
So who are we talking about now?
That's Soros.
Soros, right.
So when he's funding these judges and he's trying, and these are just tools in his belt that he can use to kind of try to push his agenda in terms of, you know, him making money, his business. And it's really quite evil. But we have to remember, too, he's been doing this for a very, very long time. So trying to trying to force our way in and just saying, we're just going to ignore these orders or we're just going to completely disregard anything a judge says, it doesn't work in our favor in the long run. I think once we have the Supreme Court that establishes precedent for President Trump to kind of make some of these moves, that's when we're going to really start seeing some of the bigger changes get implemented. And I know a lot of people are like, well, if he freezes this funding or if they freeze it, it's just going to give the enemy it's going to give the guilty party time to just cover their tracks and get away with what they've done. But I think that they're going to have a lot more intelligence with who we have in place at AG and who we have in place with the CIA and FBI with cash coming in. I think they're going to have plenty of evidence that they're going to acquire there's really nowhere for these guys to run or hide. And I think they're going to make all these connections and we're going to start seeing a lot more evidence come out and hopefully in some detail here. Then I think we'll see those Soros judges some of these corrupt politicians. I think we'll start seeing some of them get recalled and possibly have some legal consequences here as well.
Wow. Despite you, folks, if I told you what Josh was involved with and going on, you wouldn't believe that he's even here right now with me. Josh Mez, of course, riding shotgun with me, folks. Near the top of the hour, you're listening to the Hagmann Report. Today is Wednesday, February 12th, 2025. Had to double check that because, that's the way I am. But I have to say this, Eric the Tech, I just sent you, and hopefully we can play this 52 seconds. What Josh just said, about Soros and what Soros, which you saw of Soros speaking at the WEF a number of years back, he was interviewed I'm not sure what year this is, and I don't recall who the interviewer is right at the moment. My apologies. But I sent the link to Eric the Tech. Eric, do you have it? And okay, can we, is it queued? Okay, good. This is 50 seconds of George Soros a couple of years back echoing Josh Mez, what he just said about the moral and immoral aspects of business and about his practices. This is instructive. I believe this is instructive. I mean, and I'm not sure many people have seen this. Okay, here it is. Cut whatever. Go ahead.
Last 2 years, you've been blamed for financial collapse of Thailand, Malaysia, Indonesia, Japan, and Russia.
Yeah, all of the above.
Yeah, yeah. Are you that powerful?
No, I think there's a great misunderstanding. I am basically there to make money. I cannot and do not look at the social consequences of what I do. As a competitor, I've got to compete to win. As a human being, I am concerned about the society in which I live.
Which George Soros am I talking to now? The amoral George Soros or the moral George Soros?
It's one person who at one time engages in amoral activities and at the rest of the time tries to be moral.
Yeah. Thoughts? I mean, I can't imagine being interviewed and saying that. I don't know. I guess.
So basically, he's, you know, it's all about with him. It's just about the consolidation of power. And yeah, he doesn't care what the consequences are, doesn't care what the social consequences are. So he'll push any agenda he sees necessary, regardless of what the implications are, if it means him making money. So that's, you know, the good thing is there's a lot more of us than there are of him out there. So
that might have been
what was happening previously, but I think we're kind of turning the page on that way of thinking and in the corporate world, hopefully. I know there's always going to be the corruption there, but I think with some of these parallel economies and things that we're seeing, I think there's a little shift in the ecosystem there. And hopefully, some of the businesses start picking back up and we'll start seeing some of these employers hiring again. And you can tell that there's optimism out there now for once. So, it's something that we're just going to have to deal with. I don't let that Soros isn't going to affect us one way or another from here on out. And whatever he says now is we're going to try to make him irrelevant. Just okay. He's just some crazy old man talking at this point. So,
I know he has his son.
What about
Alex?
I know he has his son playing, picking up where his dad left off. But again, I think with Trump pulling out of the WEF and us getting out of the World Health Organization and all of that, we're kind of just saying, F you guys, we're done with this. And we're going to go our own way. And you guys can go yours and we'll see you later. Now, it doesn't mean that we're not going to be cleaning up any of the mess that they left behind with a lot of this corruption that we've seen. But hopefully we can see some repercussions here and we can make it put some parameters in place so we don't ever have to go through something like this again as a country.
Exactly. No, I think you're spot on with your assessments, all of them. Thank you. Okay, thank you. Now we were talking, we played that clip about activist judges being President Trump's biggest enemy right now. And then you weighed in on, and I think fantastic assessment about how this strategy will play out. Harriet Hageman, I'm not sure I'm pronouncing that last name correctly. I'm trying to make sure there's no relation to me. She's got an E in there and just one N at the end of her name. But she was on talking about impeaching the judges. Now, I'm going to ask you on the other side of this, is this maybe something that can be done? Because we have I think I had the numbers yesterday. How many hundreds of thousands, or I'm sorry, how many millions of people are impacted by federal judges that are Soros-backed, DAs that are Soros-backed, AGs that are Soros-backed? We got a lot. So
I think Mike Benz actually said about 30% of the population lives under a George Soros-controlled DA.
Yeah,
or judge,
or judge, or both.
Yeah,
Mike Benz, by the way, absolutely fantastic. He had a recent, or he posted a recent video, or somebody did, of him talking about the origins of the intelligence community. I thought that was fantastic, but that's like 60 or 41 minutes long. If you get a chance to see that or catch that, make sure you do this. But here's here's John Solomon and Amanda Head, just very briefly. The entire clip is 4.5 minutes long. We'll just play the first minute or so to give you an idea of what her thoughts are on the response from President Trump. And then you can put the cherry on top. And then we're going to get into some threats here that appear to be facing us, and some this needs time. But before that, cut six.
You've done some amazing work looking at some of the potentially unconstitutional behavior of administrative law judges. And now we have some U.S. district judges who are telling a sitting president his team can't look at executive branch data. I'd like to get your thoughts on the judiciary and whether there's a wake up moment for it in the soon. And could there even be impeachment proceedings against a few of these judges?
I think what you're saying is that the judges themselves recognize that they're on thin ice and that their decisions are most likely going to be reversed on appeal. But it's a waiting game. It's a matter of time. Can they throw a wrench in this administration, in the momentum that they have been moving forward with, and stop them from being able to enact some of the policies that we all elected President Trump to implement? So that's really what I think you're seeing, is a concerted effort where they're judge shopping. They're going to jurisdictions where they know they've got a friendly person on the bench, and they're going to enter whatever decision is necessary to stop what it is, whatever the issue at hand is. I find it shocking that they are now saying judges are actually involving themselves in what needs to be stated on federal websites. I think that just demonstrates the absurdity of what these courts are doing, that they're going so far as to dictate what the president of the United States can have in terms of websites. There's nothing that requires the website at all. Yet, according to these judges, if it has anything to do with their pet projects, they are not going to allow him to change policies. That's clearly so far outside of their jurisdiction, mm-hmm. and it's also contrary to what the Article 2 says in the Constitution.
And I think so many Americans have been, it's been a shock to the system to see this, because.
Yeah, rather than go through that, I picked the wrong half. This should have been the back half of that, where she said really the answer to this would be impeachment. But again, she's more or less following the same path that you laid out with respect to following the legal route, and going the legal route to perhaps better enable the codification of the EOs. Am I right on that?
Yeah, it looks like it pretty much spot on. I think one thing that maybe hopefully we can get out of all of this is maybe improve the efficiency of our judicial system. That would be something that would be nice to see, that it doesn't take months and months and months for answers and responses and everything else to come through. It'd be nice to be able to get some of this stuff done a lot more efficiently. Talk about saving money.
Yeah.
Get the lawyers out of there, and we'll be saving trillions.
Well, and that goes back to what we were first talking about. I mean, think about what Pam Bondi is doing as Attorney General, filing civil charges against people in the state of New York, including Letitia James. I mean, she didn't have to do that, but she included her as well. I think that to me that was a very necessary and smart move. But this is going to, I think, leave a mark on these people and certainly open up different people for civil and criminal charges. So it's all, I mean, that's all good. All right. I do have some stuff, but if we have time at the end, we'll play it about Representative Garcia, Robert Garcia, actually threatening Elon Musk. Using actual weapons against Elon Musk in this fight for democracy, as well as him pulling out a picture of Musk and calling it a dick pic. It's crazy stuff. Did you see that, by the way?
I was doing some work and I had that hearing on in the background. And I did overhear that, and it's, not just, this guy's just a complete idiot.
Oh, man.
You know, it's they have nowhere else to go. There's nothing for them to say. They have no plan. They have no strategy. They have nothing else to do. So what can they do? You know, if they're in a corner, they're going to attack. So let them do it.
Yeah.
And we'll just keep, we'll keep laughing at them, keep trolling them, and just keep doing what we're doing. And we'll expose all the corruption as we come across it.
But you have, I mean, we have certainly a mental health crisis in this country. There are social media posts, that group of union people singing out there. You probably saw it, folks in the chat, you probably saw it, singing, horribly singing. And then, of course, a listener sent me a, and a friend sent me, of course, the city, or yeah, I guess it's city in Massachusetts, sanctuary city for LGBTQ RSVP people, and the people that showed up. I mean, my goodness, it looked like a freak show. But you have all of this animus against the conservatives, against the, and I'll say this, the conservative Christians, because and then the usurpation of some of the Christian elements of Christianity is just, it's beyond belief. But look, let's get to this. This to me is extremely important. Obviously, J.J. Carroll was on a couple of shows tonight. He's been on this program. He wrote the book Invasion. I'm sorry, I don't have it with me. I can never remember the name, the title of his book, and I love his book, and I've read it many times, or a couple of times. But anyway, Todd Benzman was on talking about some intel. Pay attention to this, folks. This is probably the most important part. If you walk away with nothing except this, man, pay attention to this. This is cut 11. There's two segments to it. I cut it in two segments here. There's the general part, what we are doing, and then the other part, and the other part is what could be done in response to what we're doing. It'll make sense after this. Cut A, video 11. Hagman PI show notes, by the way, if you need to, or if you want to watch the entire thing. This is Cut A, video 11.
Against an apparatus that Pam Bondi had to come out today and say, look, you guys keep it up. She was essentially saying we're going to be arresting government officials. Todd Benzman.
Right. They're suing government officials. Illinois, now New York. It's no holds bar. They're just pulling out all stops, wherever they can find a stop, they're pulling it to get this deportation program underway. They need money. It's going to be expensive. They're looking at using defense budget money to help them ramp up. They need more deportations to kind of meet the mass deportation program, right? The definition of mass deportation, you're going to have a lot more. You have to deport a lot more, but you got to have the detention space and the infrastructure. There's a Senate bill moving forward, a spending bill that looks at maybe $175 billion for detention and deportation costs. But remember, Homan said, he said it many times, what price do you put on national security? Keeping Americans safe, it's worth it, is how they look at it. So the money's coming, but in the meantime, they may have to use defense budget money. They've done it before. They'll do it again.
Yeah, that kind of went out there. But okay, so even with regard, even without regard to the sanctuary issues that Bondi's dealing with, Todd Bensman saying, look, President Trump is going to be utilizing funds from the military budget, the Defense Department budget. Your thoughts on this? I mean, that was pretty basic, but nonetheless, it's another tactic. It's another arrow in the quiver that he's got, right? To
Yeah, absolutely. And I think right, there is no price on the safety for the safety of our country and our fellow citizens. I think they'll do whatever is necessary. And remember, how much money did it take to get everybody here in the first place? So anybody that comes at this and says, this is going to cost an astronomical amount of money, all the flights back and everything else. Well, we're actually doing a lot more economically than what was done by the previous administration on sending these people back out. And another thing that we talked about last time with Tom Homan, what he came out and said is the internal apprehensions, which means, non-border state, those are actually way up, like we were talking about on our last conversation. It's the overall numbers are down, though, because we're not seeing anybody now coming to the border. So what they have to do is it's a good thing, but the numbers aren't where they need them to be because they're getting so much resistance and from within, and with these leaks and I've seen that these gangs are getting leaks before they are able to actually go and apprehend some of these people. So of course, they're moving as fast as they can, but it's going to take some time to get past all of the bureaucratic nonsense that they're going through and endangering the lives of these law enforcement officials. And it's only a matter of time till somebody actually gets hurt. And when that happens, I think the hammer is going to drop if that happens. But hopefully. I think they're doing a fantastic job so far. It's just, are they going as quickly as they can, as they wanted to? No, but the numbers are very good for the internal apprehensions. They're just, if we're going to be getting everybody out, they realize it has to start moving a little bit quicker. So,
are you personally optimistic with Kash Patel once he's in the FBI to root out, 90% of the people or the great, great majority of people who are putting other people at risk by the leaks and everything? Are you optimistic about that?
I think honestly, and just, from following Kash Patel, since the first Trump administration, I think he's probably one of the best hopes for the for law enforcement in our country to reform it and kind of gain the trust back, get some of the morality back, because it's just with J6 and everything else, it's just so tarnished.
Wow. Yeah.
They have to do something. There has to be some type of reform, and these agents have to use some discretion versus, good versus evil, right versus wrong. It's not that hard. And so I think that he'll restore a lot of the integrity back into the law enforcement community, the federal law enforcement community. And hopefully, he'll get to work immediately, I'm sure, because he is one person that knows what he's doing. He knows where all the bodies are buried. And I think he'll come out swinging as soon as he hour one, as soon as he is confirmed.
I wouldn't be surprised if he's got, you know, orders in front of him, and once sworn in, you know, those orders are going to be initiated. So, okay, now that first clip, a minute long or whatever, minute and a half long, kind of laid a little bit of groundwork, but this is where it gets really dicey. This is where the threat to you and I, folks, if you're listening to this or watching this, this is where the threat to our lives come in. This is where the threat comes in. And this is new information. This is breaking information. This is information Steve Bannon had, Todd Benzman talking about this tonight. This is disturbing. And Ms., your analysis is going to be important on this. This is cut B in the show notes, and we're going to run it and then pause it and then run it some more because it's that important. So listen carefully, folks. Pay attention to this. Here's cut B, video 11, same video as before, cut B.
Go back to your original question about Mexico, because there's also reporting, fresh reporting out, CBS, et cetera, that the Mexicans are detecting U.S. spy plane activity over the northern border regions. This is unusual. This is something new. What do you think they're doing up there with AWACS and other kind of high-tech surveillance aircraft? Well, I've got sources that have been telling me that there's a lot of tabletopping going on in D.C. With the Mexicans to target fentanyl labs down there, that maybe the Mexicans are going to be targeting. I'm going to guess that the Americans are going to be providing the intel. But it's interesting that the Mexicans are the ones complaining about the spy flights and disclosing it. They're the ones disclosing it. So I don't know if they're in on this or not. But the point is there's a lot of U.S. activity that we're not used to seeing happening over Mexico right now, and probably on the ground as well. Remember, Trump just put out executive orders that publicly declare, and memos publicly declare, all-out total war on the Mexican cartels and their fentanyl labs to stop the fentanyl flow. I think he means business on this thing. So the Mexicans just put 10,000 more troops out, and they're rolling them out right now as we speak. And their job, according to the tariff deal that Trump cut, is to dismantle the Mexican cartels. So maybe we're going to see the end of the hugs, not bullets policy down there, sort of required by Donald Trump. This is something that's definitely interesting and worth watching, whether we're heading into a hot shooting war down there.
All right. Mez, your thoughts on a hot shooting war with the cartels who are inside the U.S., in the interior, but especially along the border, whose money, the flow of cash has been disrupted. But your thoughts on what Benzman just said about maybe there's going to be a shooting war. But that's not the worst, folks. That's not the worst of it. What are your thoughts?
I think, as of today, the Mexican Senate approved the entry of U.S. Special Forces military personnel into Mexico. So everything they are doing with the spy planes and with the surveillance equipment that they have, you better believe they are gathering intelligence about where to go, who to strike, who the players are. And it's going to happen. And, Special Forces going in, you know how I feel about those guys. So
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know what? Stop right there for a second. Just to honor your father, the Green Beret, Vietnam, buried in Arlington. Actually, Josh Mez really honored his father very, very nicely by arranging all of that. And it took a lot of doing, and I've got a lot of respect for Josh. But yes, I know how you feel about that. But I did want to make sure people knew that your dad was a hero, and you took care of things. So go ahead.
That's right. So you know, we know that the special forces, their primary purpose is to go in and train the indigenous personnel there. So I think what we're going to see is. It's U.S. Special Forces going in and working in concert with the Mexican military or Special Forces, and we're going to start seeing a lot of ground operations working hand in hand with their government and trying to weed out some of these cartels. And it's going to turn into it's going to turn bloody. I'm pretty sure of that, one way or another. But
yeah.
But I think with us there for training purpose, training purposes,
advisory capacity,
right? Advise. So I think we're going to see some action here, especially if we're flying our surveillance equipment over there, over the border and over that territory. You know that. They usually move pretty quickly because intelligence has tends to change very quickly. So if they are there, they're going to be moving pretty quick.
Well, okay, and this yes, I agree 100% with what you said, but this goes back to the two sources who gave me some information that. Todd Bensman talks about that is the blowback from the operations and the potential leaks from Mexico, perhaps some of the corrupt local Mexican politicians, if you will, close to the border, but the threat to us here. This is now, from this point forward in this video, folks, this is the meat, and this is what everyone, I think, needs to be concerned about. And watch, keep your head on a swivel. Understand this is possible. Watch what happens next from the blowback. This is picking up where we left off, and this is so critically important. Here it is.
Well, I want to one of the top intel people knew you were coming on, been looking at your writings, also took, been doing their own independent assessment. So the IRS, the ISR flights, which is the intelligence, surveillance, and reconnaissance, right? The ISR flights over California and the coast along the Mexican border, very much an indicator that we are about to start to put the smackdown on the cartels, but we had better be prepared for the cartels to return live fire in the continental United States. They may really go after a large-scale attack inside our lifelines, poisoning the water or pouring fentanyl across produce or in our grocery stores. It's an ongoing war, and the cartels are just not going to roll over and give up. That's an intelligence expert of the highest authority. Your thoughts, Todd Bensman?
Yeah, they're not going to take it laying down. Those guys are going to shoot. Where they aim their fire is going to be the big question. Are they going to shoot at the Mexicans, or are they going to try something against U.S. Agents or military? I don't think that it's coincidental that the 10th Mountain Division is being mustered right now for a border mission. Those guys, they're intimidating. They're coming with spy aircraft and all of their gear. So, and they're going to probably end up in, I don't know where they're going to end up. I'm guessing they're going to end up in Arizona, New Mexico, kind of blue states that don't have a lot of state police down there. They're intimidating to have, to have those. And I'm also hearing that, and this is unconfirmed, it's a one source thing. I'm just going to say that. I don't know for sure. that the U.S. Navy is going to be moving assets up the Pacific coast, elements of the Sixth Fleet might be moving up there. Things are happening. I'm pretty sure things are happening. And it shouldn't be a surprise because Trump is messaging and projecting, we're going after this. We are not going to just sit back like the last administration. We're not going to let the Mexicans sit back either. We've declared them a foreign terrorist organization, or we're about to declare them a foreign terrorist organization, or all of them, or some of them. I'm not sure how they're going to scope that, which means that they can seize assets globally. They can go after these cartels. They can charge banks and individuals with material support, which is a 20-year kind of you're going to prison deal. And they're cornering the cartels. And one other thing I want to say about that is the Sheinbaum administration down there and liberal media all over Mexico and in the United States keep harping over and over again that that U.S. gun stores are supplying those cartels with all of their arsenals. And that is just completely bogus. Some of it does come from U.S. gun stores, retailers, for sure, and ammo as well. But those cartels are armed up with second and third generation fully automatic belt-fed 50 caliber machine guns. They are not getting those in the U.S. They've got Claymore mines. They've even reputed to have these javelin, shoulder-fired javelin missiles down there, two or three of them or more. And they've got mortars, and they have military-grade equipment, and they're getting most of that from Mexico's own armories.
Yep.
And from Central American armories, older stockpiles and that sort of thing. Go ahead.
Yeah, no. Just hang on. I want to hold you through the break. Because 10th Mountain Division is one of the toughest that we've got. And particularly, it was always tough in World War II. It fought in Italy. That's where it became famous. But, man, it became even, you know, as famous in modern warfare in Afghanistan, in the Hindu Kush. These are tough hombres. When you send them down there, you mean business. You mean something's going to get lit up. This is not law enforcement. This is war. Todd Bensman.
Lots and lots of drug trafficking and smuggling through the mountains of Arizona. Rough, rough country. Same with New Mexico. Rough country. So I have to imagine that, you know, they're going to put them there. But also, you know, remember, it's legitimate strategy to place military assets that you hope you don't need, like for the Gaza war during the Israel war with Hezbollah in the north. You know, we moved up a bunch of aircraft carriers and all sorts of battleships and just let them sit there and said, hey, Hezbollah and Iran, you better not get too out of hand because we've got power here. Well, same with the 10th Mountain Division. You know, you put those guys down there, you're sending a big message to the other side of the border. The one thing that those cartels absolutely respect are military personnel on the American side. You don't ever really hear much about those guys getting fired on. And actually, they, to an extent, they also respect the Mexican military because they've got arms that are equivalent to what they have. So that's really what it's all about. Are your arms
okay, you can
powerful?
Cut that. You get the idea. The main focus, and Mez, you comment on this, and then, of course, your information about or your assessment about the military. But the main thing I got today was about the potential for the cartels, especially those cartels working inside, in the interior, to rain havoc upon the American people, poisoning the water, using fentanyl. Can you imagine us getting crop dusted with fentanyl, for example, or other situations? They've got the means, as well as perhaps shooting, you know, like a Russian-style school kind of attack, things like that. And don't forget the Obama Holder Fast and Furious operation that took place just a decade ago. So all of that. But the blowback, poisoning our water, poisoning our produce. I mean, your thoughts, my friend?
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty terrifying, and it's absolutely definitely a possibility that they could use any number of things to poison our produce. I mean, we get, you go to the grocery store and half the fruit and vegetables that you see say product of Mexico. So and knowing that with how integrated Mexican cartels are with the logistics down in Mexico and the cross-border stuff, it's absolutely possible that they could have some of these fruits and vegetables laced with fentanyl. So I'd say when you're out there shopping, just be very aware of what you're buying. I could absolutely see Russian Mall type of attack, or even an October 7th type of attack, where they're going to be maybe trying to take some hostages. Who knows? This thing can unfold very rapidly, and especially once we start seizing assets and seizing bank accounts and we start taking their funding away, we're going to see it escalate extremely fast. So I think we're a little ways off from that now that we're just now deploying special forces to that area. And we're assisting them with their training. I think we're, a couple months off, maybe summertime we're looking at here. But once we start seizing bank accounts and taking their money away, it's going to be, it's going to be the gloves are off. And, another thing was with one of the recent Tucker Carlson interviews where Tucker Carlson is saying that over about 50% of the munitions that we have sent to Ukraine have gone missing and have been sold on the black market. And a large portion of those have been transferred to Mexico and the Mexican cartels. So they do have some very heavy duty equipment, some military grade equipment. So it's not like these guys do not have, they have very deep pockets. They're very powerful and they have very, very dangerous equipment. So I think it's going to be a lot more than us just going in there and, showing them who's boss. And these are not people hiding in caves. These are they're not, obviously they don't have the training and they're no match for our guys, but they do have the equipment and money to fight back. So I think that's one of the strategic interests that Donald Trump has in the Panama Canal as well. Knowing a lot of these container ships that are going through those ports in that region are transporting fentanyl in from China and they're bringing weapons in from overseas wherever they ended up. These weapons can pretty much end up anywhere. We have all that military equipment we left in Afghanistan. We have all of the military equipment that we sent to the Ukraine. So it is, we're getting set up here for another pretty large scale engagement, and it's gonna be a little bit heavier duty than I think most people are realizing once this thing really gets underway. So we have to be, we have to be wary of that.
I am so glad you mentioned what you mentioned, and this is why Josh comes on, because he adds a lot to the intelligence portion of the investigation, the research investigation, and the information. You mentioned a couple of things. The Panama Canal and our Afghanistan withdrawal. All of it is criminal. With the Panama Canal being essentially ceded to the CCP authority. But with respect to Afghanistan, folks, listen to this, because we cannot afford to forget this. the Pentagon. I mean, think of Milley, okay, for example, and think of Biden when you're thinking about this, and Harris. The Pentagon reported that the U.S. left $7.12 billion of military equipment in Afghanistan. Okay, we also gave up the largest air base in Afghanistan. It's now taken over by China. Think about these numbers as well. 280 aircraft, including UH-60 Blackhawks and M-17 helicopters, 61,000 military vehicles of all types. This is what we left there, including more than 2,000 armored vehicles and mine-resistant ambush-protected or MRAP vehicles, 258,000 rifles, and that includes M-16s and AK-47s, 56,000 machine guns, 31,000 rocket-propelled grenade and handheld grenade launchers, 18,000 gravity bombs, 16,000 aviation rockets, 224 D-130 howitzer artillery guns, 30 million rounds of ammo, 17.4 thousand night vision devices, 95 drones, body armor of all types, biometric security equipment, and so on. I could go on. When you listen to Benson, and I'm gonna, again, I'm going to turn this back to you, but the information in addition to that, he was on with Steve Bannon's program this evening. Some of that equipment, in addition to Ukraine, but some of that left over from Afghanistan made it to Ukraine, and some is being flown and then shipped through the Panama Canal with the approval, so to speak, of Chinese Communist Party being at both sides of the canal, and making their way up to the U.S. north of the southern border on the U.S. some of the U.S. ports, okay, one in particular or maybe two, and then being dispersed to the border or into the interior, especially with the small arms. So that was a lot of numbers and a lot of stats, but that could add to it, like you said, right? I mean,
well, absolutely. You know, that was done. The excuse that they said it was going to take too long and it was going to cost too much money to bring everything back to the United States. So they just decided to abandon it. And of course, they claim there's no real danger by doing so. But that was done with intent. That was intentionally left there. Think of all the false flag events that could occur around the world where they could just claim that was the Americans that did this. They could do that in Russia. They could do it in Ukraine. They could do it anywhere. You know, we can see some munitions go off in Mexico, and Mexico can and kill civilians, and Mexico can say, "Hey, that was the U.S. Army that killed these civilians." You know, that was Donald Trump that did this. So, you know, that is something that we have to be very, very careful with. They have they have the money, they have the funding, they have the weapons to do a lot of damage, especially, you know, within the United States as well. So it's very, very important that we remain very vigilant right now, especially as this starts to progress and we start taking their money.
Yeah. And you brought up a good point that I really didn't think about that closely. Imagine with all of the military assets that President Trump sent to Mexico and are working for the interdiction of both people and drugs. Imagine something like you said, imagine a false flag using munitions and equipment from Ukraine, perhaps originating from Afghanistan, from our leaving everything there, and then having, imagine what public opinion would be like. Hey, the signature on this is made in America, and the Americans must have done this. President Trump, like you said, President Trump did this. And boy, we'd be in the shit, wouldn't we? I mean,
yeah, wow. Absolutely. And I think, I think that's why we are starting to deploy a lot of these intelligence assets to that region. And you got to remember, though, we do have the best of the best in the military and the intelligence community. So regardless of what we left over there, we do have, the good guys are on their way. The cavalry, in essence, is on their way. So hopefully a lot of this or all of it can be prevented before it goes anywhere. But it's just something that, we want to urge everybody to make sure that you're just keeping your eyes open here, especially in states like Texas and Florida, and a lot of these, a lot of the more the right to carry states where they're not going to be pressing too much about that type of issue. So, they're going to try to. There's so many different things that they can use, so many different things that they can say. To really cause some turmoil here. So we just got to be very careful.
I agree with you on that. And I found it interesting. Did you see, you always see this stuff before I do. I think the Pentagon, or I'm not sure who put this out, but it was a short 30-second kind of a, almost looked like an advertisement for the Department of Defense with jets on a runway and all ready to go. Did you happen to see that?
I have not seen that, no.
Okay. It's just an odd thing to put out. It was put out, I think, late last night or this morning. To me, it was just an odd thing to put out, like, hey, we're ready and we're ready to kick some backside. And I couldn't equate it to anything except maybe Gaza. Any thoughts on President Trump saying, hey, all the hostages by noon on Saturday or all hell's going to break loose? Well, what if they're all dead? Or what if, what if that doesn't happen?
Right. And that's kind of, I think that's what we're really trying to get to the bottom of right now. We're trying to assess how many hostages are actually still alive with a limited amount of supplies that were already going into Gaza as it was. I don't really see them making it a priority to take care of any of their hostages. So I would assume a lot of those hostages are probably not in very good shape. If not, they're deceased. And I think that this, if that is the case, that the ceasefire is not going to hold up for very much longer. And it's noon. What time? Noon in what time zone? Saturday, I guess, because I'll be watching, and hopefully.
That's a good point.
Hopefully they can at least respond and keep us out of war, keep it from more people dying, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. So really, for the rest of the week, we're looking at, I guess, the confirmation of RFK Jr. It looks like he's going to, he'll be confirmed. Cash Patel, your read on that? I mean, I kind of think he, I mean, will it be this week with Cash? And why are they dragging their feet so long with him aside from the obvious? What are we looking at the remainder of the week? Go ahead.
I mean, they're obstructing it as much as possible. And I think a lot of the rhinos are kind of being strong armed to the will of the current administration and to the people. So I'm hopeful that Cash gets through this week. Hopefully RFK is pretty imminent here. But I do think Cash Patel will be getting through. I don't see how they could stop him at this point. I think there's too much public support for it.
Okay. All right. I'm going to go with you on that. One thing I forgot to ask you, this is going to come out of the blue. Somebody had sent me an email knowing you were coming on tonight, and I forgot to forward this, and I apologize. There was an article published in the American Thinker last night, or this morning, or today, whatever, by Janet Levy. And the title is Stargate a Gateway to the Digital Gulag? Okay, so I was sent the link, which I didn't send to you. And the question was, you know, ask Josh about this, Josh Mez about this. And because, unless you're prepared to answer this, I'll give you just a couple of sentences on the first part. Now, let me do that anyway, because the people out there might not know this. So on when he became president, President Donald Trump took two actions that were conflicting. So conflicting that the second nullified the gains of the first. Worse, it boosts the great reset advanced by the global elite and may herd Americans into the sort of digital gulag in which Communist China confines its citizens. So the two actions were this. The first one was January 20th. And it was an executive order withdrawing the U.S. from the World Health Organization. Note that this announcement of intent, and he later said the U.S. might consider rejoining if they clean it up. In any case, it's a formal delinking can happen only in January of next year. Okay, that's one thing. And then, let's see here. There was another one that conflicted with that. I'm getting to that. I did highlight it, folks. I really did. If I can find it. So, okay, there's something about Starlink and the surveillance state in here where he was pushing Starlink. Catherine Austin Fitz. I'm getting to it. Folks, relax. I'm getting to it. Okay. Let's see. Well, here it is. On January 21st, his first full day in office, flanked by Larry Ellison of Oracle, Japanese guy of SoftBank, and Sam Altman, your favorite, Sam Altman of OpenAI, Trump unveiled Stargate, a project in which the three CEOs will spearhead investments of $500 billion in artificial intelligence and mRNA tech. He pledged support for the nationwide data silos Stargate entails, describing them as an urgent need. Ellison, the Japanese guy's son, and Altman are all titans of the World Economic Forum, through which billionaire Soros and his ilk operate. So, he brought those people in to advance Stargate. And of course, the digital gulag kind of attached to the WHO, kind of backing out of it, but we can't do that until January of next year, officially and fully. But the bottom line here is, is there any contradictory moves that you see as I'm going through this lengthy treatise here by Ms. Levy?
Well, that was one of the first things we touched on today with in regards to Altman and that $500 billion investment where Elon came through and did that the $97.4 billion unsolicited offer. So I think there's a strategic move, or strategic play behind that, of course.
Yeah, that makes sense. Perhaps because that's not mentioned in this article. So okay, that makes sense. That that could have been the takeover, so to speak, or the tamp down. Mm-hmm. Okay, I got it.
You know, if you look at what Elon said regarding that, he's saying that it needs to remain open source and basically so that the engineers can get kind of behind the curtain and make sure that it is not being manipulated in some way.
Got it. Okay.
Because that is the big concern now is if it's very possible if they do have it closed source and it is a for-profit that it could very well you know, very well could be the digital gulag. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I'm not happy about that. Okay, so your thoughts, I'll just your thoughts on do you think we're I guess reassure me, okay, rather than ask, just reassure me that we're not headed, based on President Trump's actions, capturing that operation, the OpenAI, that we are not headed to losing our privacy and being in this surveillance panopticon. I guess you already did that by saying.
And that's the perpetual war I was speaking to.
Okay.
That's going to be something that is going to take that is going to take a tremendous amount of effort to kind of secure digital rights in that regard.
Okay. That makes feel better.
I think there needs to be some type of bill passed that basically gives the American citizens rights over their digital footprint. Because right now it's being used by every advertisement company out there, every software company, every big technological company out there. Your data is being used in one way or another. So when it comes to that $500 billion investment, like I was saying, I think it is. If we didn't do that and he didn't issue that executive order right away, those investments go to China anyway. So, I think the bigger concern is China having, putting us in the digital gulag, not from within. I think that is something that Trump is trying to combat, actively try to combat. That's why he declared it an emergency in the first place. So I think that there, again, that's something that the intelligence community and the people behind the scenes are going to make sure that they're going to clear up here.
Wow. Okay. And that makes a lot of sense, folks, if you caught the beginning of the show, obviously. And now that makes a lot of sense, especially with that that question that was emailed to me by a listener. Now I get that. Okay, now it's more solidified, so I feel better about it. All right, we only have like 2 minutes left. I can't believe how quickly time has gone. Any closing thoughts that you have? Any closing comments, concerns? Anything you want to say? It's your oyster right now. Go ahead and lay it out. Or if you just want to.
Well, just thank you for having me on again. And, I really enjoy doing these shows with you. So hopefully we can make it more of a regular occurrence or a weekly something. Yeah. You know, because
I'm going to drag your backside here.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, you got to be in studio sometime maybe, or, be a regular. Yeah. That's.
Yeah. And Eric, the tech is, as usual, doing a killer job back there. So well done, Eric.
Yeah. There you go. And one last little tidbit. I don't know how many people know. Well, it's obvious. I mean, it's interesting that President Trump got American hostages released from Russia, Belarus, Venezuela, Gaza, all in 23 days. Well, and how many did Biden get? Unsure. And we'll be talking about this tomorrow. Lee Zeldin just happened to find, an extra $20 billion outside of the EPA ready to be laundered, left there by Biden. Yes, yes, and yes. Absolutely incredible. Josh Mez, thank you so very much for your time tonight. God bless you, and we'll be talking.
Thanks for having me.
All right, bud. Folks, that was Josh Mez, and always a pleasure when he comes on, and he is an absolute fountain of knowledge, I'm telling you. He's really one of the most natural researchers and investigators I've had the pleasure of coming in contact with and being a part of this team. So he is a treasure, to be sure. I'm not going to get into what you know, Whoopi Goldberg, The View, making fun of Elon Musk's son's name. I mean, how low can you go? I know I make fun of certain things and I shouldn't do it, but, you know, these are people clapping and